The story is an ancient Egyptian one. It presents an archetypal map of dealing with unbearable shock and terror to forestall further symptoms of PTSD and allow the development that can come through the survival and integration of trauma. It's as relevant now for many individuals, including our vets coming back from Iraq.
That is because with timeless wisdom, the story brings together the physical, emotional, cognitive, relational, and symbolic spiritual elements that all need to be addressed. The story also gives us an example of psyche's way of healing through the creation of a symbolic image that allows the replication of the emotional intensity of the original trauma and allows it to emerge within the context of a new kind of relationship that shifts the ego-self axis. The tale is about a shipwrecked sailor, dated 2200 BC, that's 4,000 years old, at the very beginning of the Middle Kingdom of Egypt, its early Bronze Age, the same time as Stonehenge was being built in England. The story is about an ancestor of Sinbad, Odysseus, Bran, Robinson Crusoe, and all those other lone castaways whose ship is lost, signifying that previous psychological spiritual containment has been swept into the unconscious, leaving the traveler horribly abandoned and in deadly peril. This is an experience that can feel catastrophic to any adult, comparable to all the nameless horrors that Winnicott calls unthinkable anxieties. The protagonist of this old story is an official sent by ship to the mines of Pharaoh with 150 sailors of the best of Egypt. In this valiant, experienced, and fearless company, his fellow is sent to the depths of earth for its gold. Instead, his ship and companions vanish into the depths of the sea. And the gold he finds by the grace of God is what we would call alchemical. Those wonderful sailors with whom he sets off represent his own self-confident, heroic capacity and the ego ideal of the community, which he matched when he set forth. But the ocean of his own fate wrecks the collective vessel that contained him. He becomes traumatically separated from all he knew and finds himself utterly alone, like the orphans and widows that Jung talks about as a metaphor for that crucial initial stage of individuation. We see the once competent official of Pharaoh in deadliest peril, reduced to a defenseless victim at the mercy of archetypal forces. It's a good image of traumatic shock. And Jung says, it forces itself tyrannically, these overwhelming feelings of helplessness, force themselves tyrannically upon the conscious mind. The explosion of affect is a complete invasion of the individual and pounces upon him like an enemy or a wild animal. Miraculously, though, the wind and wave wash the Egyptian to an unknown land, and he finds it is a generous land, as he tells it in hieroglyphics written by the scribe of cunning fingers, Ameni Amenaa, and translated by Flinders Petrie and Hans Hornum. There on the island I laid me in a thicket, and the shadow covered me. He's inert, helpless. And then, as he begins to recuperate and his survival needs kick in, I stretched my limbs to try to find something for my mouth. I found there figs and grain, melons of all kinds, fishes and birds, wonderful hieroglyphics they would make. And nothing was lacking. So we can see it was more than a safe haven. It was the total opposite of what he has just been through, the kind of an antiodromia image that the mind can escape to after a traumatic shock, to find or create a safe, ideal archetypal paradise. It's a defensive pattern that we see often created and clung to by our most traumatized clients. He goes on. Then I satisfied myself and left on the ground that which was over, of what my arms had been filled withal. I dug a pit, I lighted a fire, and I made a burnt offering unto the gods. Although he is in what Mircea Eliade calls spiritual limbo, because his soul has become unmoored from his previous safety in human community, he recovers from exhausted helplessness to become active in support of life. We know that such actions often help us in emotional chaos and are often vital for surviving trauma. And that was part of the motivation for the many volunteers rushing to Ground Zero in New York or New Orleans after the flood as practical helpers, some of them quite disturbed themselves, pretending to be therapists. It's the motivation behind the defensive fix-it caretaking that all therapists can get into when we're complexed and in pursuit with our clients. So for the Egyptian, it's a relief to have survived.